Well, a gracious good evening to you. It's the Joe and Joe Weather Show on this Monday night, the 1st of March, 2021. Mr. Rayo, everything is moving along so quickly here. I mean, the 3 months of winter just came and went, and the three coldest months are done. And now, here we are on March 1st. My God, it before you know it, it'll be Christmas again.
Meteorological spring has arrived, whether or not you want to believe it.
Well, that's true, considering what the weather is. And, speaking of Christmas, the Joe and Joe Weather Show is brought to you by, among other things, hang on. Oh, come on.
Wholesale Holiday Lighting.
Right, by?
By Wholesale Holiday Lighting.
Yes.
By Giannini.
Giannini. That's correct. Yes, Wholesale Holiday Lighting by Giannini at 162 Ocean Avenue in Lindenhurst. And their telephone number is 631-957-5106. The website is liholidaylighting.com. And they are your complete holiday lighting specialist. They will meet all your decorating needs, or maybe you want to decorate as a career. Give them a call, 631-957-5106. And of course, with the March being the first of three spring months, it's time to get your yard in order. So go to Omni True Value Hardware, because they've got mulch, topsoil, sand, gravel, everything you need to get your yard in tip-top shape. 1226 North Wellwood Avenue in West Babylon, 631-756-1125 for the best prices in town, omnitruevalue.com. So, I noticed the winds, it's just basically, Joe, it's just blowing away. Well, it was anyway, late this afternoon. Those wind gusts, I saw some gusts up into the mid-40s. It's actually a little bit lower now, but forecast gusts around sunup in some places over 40 miles an hour with temperatures in the upper teens. That brings some wind chills down to the low single digits in some places. That's cold. I don't want that.
It's going to be a tough morning for anyone who is still commuting to work in the midst of the pandemic and who has to wait on the platform for a railroad car or waiting for a bus. It is going to be one of those, it's going to be one of the tougher mornings, actually. I mean, we've gone through, I mean, February in itself was tough because of the cold and the snow, whatever, but tomorrow morning is going to be one of those memorable mornings in terms of, as you just mentioned, Joe, wind gusts, cold temperatures. It's going to be rough. Happy spring to you all.
Yes, indeed. And we've got all sorts of wind advisories up. I'm trying to create the map on the fly. So I'll bring that up on the screen. And Joe Rayo will be monitoring the chat board, because I'm on a single monitor tonight, so I can't watch it. So pass on your comments and questions, and do be kind, please. And Joe and I will try to address them and answer them forthwith. So here's the hazards map, Joe, from the Weather Service. So they've got they finally filled in the blank. They had that blank yesterday, remember, yes, up in Dutchess County and in a few other spots. Well, they filled it in, and excuse me. So now everybody's under a wind advisory from most of Maryland, parts of West Virginia, northern Delaware, New Jersey, much of Pennsylvania, and New York State, except for the westernmost parts of those two states and also the northernmost part of New York. Vermont, the western half of Vermont, all of Massachusetts, all of Connecticut, Long Island, Rhode Island. And in fact, Joe, the local offices at Upton, they actually extended the wind advisory twice, first to 10 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. Now they've pushed it all the way to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And with the strong March sun tries to heat that air up with the gradient and everything else, it's going to be a lot of mixing. It's likely to be pretty gusty right through the day and maybe even into the evening hours tomorrow.
You know, I actually, with all due respect to what you just said, I actually believe that once we get past noontime tomorrow, that we're going to see a noticeable diminishing of the wind during the afternoon. I was kind of scratching my head, wondering why they did extend that that wind advisory. And it's not going to, not saying that the winds are not going to be busy tomorrow. I could see winds gusting to 30 to 40, especially early in the day. But I honestly believe that once we get into the middle and latter part of the afternoon tomorrow, the winds will have dropped off markedly. And by tomorrow night, late tomorrow night, there'll hardly be any winds at all. The high pressure is going to be building in, and the pressure gradient is going to be untightening, so to speak, rather quickly, I think. But that's later tomorrow. Tonight and into early tomorrow, it's a whole different ball of wax, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, when I was looking at the wind forecast, the wind gusts that they had for tomorrow during the day, it's mostly from New York City east that they've got gusts up into the 40s. This is the I pulled up the map for noontime, but they do have the winds lower. I mean, they have gusts in the low and mid 30s in the Hudson Valley, and of course they've got the hole in Dutchess County where no, the wind will only gust to 24 miles an hour instead of 35 to 40 everywhere else. But it does definitely drop off in New Jersey, down in Pennsylvania, and points further south. But they just seem to be confined from New York City eastward and over Long Island. Now, tomorrow's going to be one of those days along the coast where, at least certainly for Long Island, where it could blow away well into the afternoon before the winds die off. But yeah, maybe by you, those winds should come off their peaks, I would think, during the afternoon hours.
Yeah, no question it's going to be a busy day tomorrow for the wind, especially in the morning. But I just think, again, that by tomorrow afternoon, I think a lot of us who might be outside might be saying, like, you know, is it over?
Yeah.
Well, is it beginning to wind on down? Meanwhile, Chuck Cardillo comments that it's snowing like crazy where he is.
Oh, yeah, because you know why? Because he's getting that. He's getting the northwest wind and the lake effect. So I'm going to go right to, you know what, let's bring up the radar because there are some snow showers going on. Hang on a second here. Today has not been a good technology day for me. Let's just put it that way. But here's our beautiful UCAR radar. And there's some pretty hefty looking snow showers, Joe, that are up in over the Catskills right now. In fact, I will go even closer up. Because you know why? Because it's Chuck, and Chuck deserves to have a close-up radar view here. In fact, let me loop it. Hang on a second. Let's go 3 hours, and we'll pick Binghamton. How's that?
I'm wondering whether or not. Well, the way the movement is, I think that there's one batch that may. It'll probably pass across Poughkeepsie, but I don't think it's going to get as far south as my area, unless something suddenly pops up.
But well, there's the Binghamton radar. There are some pretty hefty bands of snow there that are moving. In fact, there's one big patch there east of Binghamton. You see it there on the radar on the loop at the last frame, right in there. And Chuck's on the west. He's on the west side, so he's getting all this. He gets the bonanza snowfalls when they get the northwest, you know, the howling northwest wind like we have right now. So there's your snow shower activity there, and I'll just go back to the full U.S. loop here so you can take a look. We do have some leftover rain. In fact, it sounded like somebody had a fire hose on my roof last night. It absolutely poured around 4:30 in the morning and woke me up out of a lovely sound sleep. But this is what's left of the weather front now, running across North Carolina, northern Georgia, northern Alabama, back down into Louisiana and East Texas. We don't have any severe weather going on. And in fact, I had a full-blown wind shift here. I'm down in the – and my temperature went from near 60 this morning to mid-40s by late afternoon. So I'm chilling down in a big hurry. And the rest of the U.S. is snooze fest. Nothing on, nothing going on radar-wise. Very, very quiet. You know, I think this would qualify for the March Lion with the wind. But in terms of overall storminess across the United States, I mean, you've got this flat front. Look at the satellite. There's just, you know, the stream of moisture running southwest to northeast across the Gulf states and off the Carolina coast and then out into the open waters of the Atlantic. You got a little bit of moisture coming into the Pacific Northwest that's coming over the top and into the northern plains. Other than that, there's nothing. I mean, it's just no major storms, no minor storms, just a very relatively quiet week outside of what's going on with the wind in the Northeast.
Now, Matt Kay on the chat board is asking do you use your weighted blanket in Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have three weighted blankets. Yes. So my weighted comforter, my 20-pound weighted comforter. Yes, I do. I'm 2,200 feet up here. So it gets cold up here in the mountains at night, especially at night. We get down. I mean, I've had a lot of days that I've been down here on and off in the last 2 months where, you know, it's been down in the 20s. On some of the time that I was back up in February and I was following the weather along, there were a number of nights here where the temperatures were down in the mid-teens. So it does get cold up here. It really does. And tonight's good. I have the fireplace going tonight.
Really?
Yes, I do.
No. Might give Renata some ideas. We haven't started one of our fireplaces in a while.
Well, did she chop enough wood in the fall? Did you make it through the season?
We have plenty of wood. We have plenty of wood. Plenty of wood. Plenty of kindling, if you will.
Yes, no, I love.
The very funny thing is, we got those from. I don't know where we got them from. I think somebody gave them to us. Those artificial logs.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, but the thing is, we've had them now, I think for like 10 years. We've hardly ever used them.
Yeah.
We just use the regular wood, you know?
They don't give off any heat. Those artificial logs, they give off.
They're just for decorative purposes.
Yeah, but that's not the point of the fireplace, is that you can get cozy and warm. Not that it had to, not that it'll look pretty. But no matter. Anyway, at least from the standpoint of this week and through this weekend and into next week, Joe, I really don't see any major storms. And in fact, I'm predicting that we could have a rather sizable warm-up next week. I don't know if you take a look at anything today.
I absolutely agree with that. And in fact, one of the local forecasters here in the New York area, who will go nameless, went for a high temperature next Monday in New York of 38 degrees. And I'm kind of scratching my head and saying, how do you end up with a 38-degree temperature? Everything that I've looked at here exactly agrees with what you just said. I think we're going to see a big warm-up starting at the beginning of next week, if not maybe a little sooner. So where do you get 38 degrees?
Yeah, the only thing that slows it up, and we're talking about maybe for one day, is that if you got this trough along the East Coast, so that's got to pull out. So if for some reason it pulls out a little bit slower, which sometimes it does that, it's not going to make any difference other than the fact that as far as precip or anything like that, because we're not going to get we're not going to see any. But if the trough takes a little bit longer to pull out, it might delay the warm up. But the warm up's coming, whether it comes on Monday or Tuesday. I would think that as soon as the trough starts to pull to the east, temperatures will jump immediately into the 40s. And then the day that follows, I'm thinking that we could you could have a run into the 60s at some point next week for a day or two.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to stop it. I really didn't see any. The only thing for the immediate coast is the south wind and the sea breeze, which this time of year, kicks in almost automatically. So that would impact those areas. But unless you're living right along the coast, I'm thinking, the warm-up is going to cover a good portion of the eastern part of the United States, in my never-to-be-humble opinion. Okay, good. We're on the same page with that.
I believe it. I believe it. And in fact, if you want to share, you want to share a screen here.
Oh, sure. Hold on. Let me get you control. let's see. Yeah, go ahead.
All righty.
You may now share the screen.
So here you go. This is the Climate Prediction Center, and these are the people who specialize in long-range forecasts. These are just probabilities. They're probabilities in terms of temperature and also in terms of precipitation. You're seeing their temperature probability map. And as you can see, we are within the zone between the 9th and 15th of March, the 8 to 14 day outlook of 60 to 70% for above normal temperatures, which would pretty much spell out, Joe, that you're right. I think temperatures in that time frame will have hit maybe even more than once 60 degrees. Dare I say, maybe, you know, by mid-month, by the 15th, the Ides of March, we might even be talking about temperatures up here now, not down where you are, but up here, maybe trying to approach 70. Would that be nice?
No, look, under the right conditions, there's nothing that stops it. It's one thing if you get a west-southwest flow that lasts all of one day, okay, where you get a cold high that goes out and you get a west-southwest flow for a day. That's just something like Wednesday of this week when this first high pulls out. It's not sitting there long enough to produce warmer air, essentially. So you need a high that's going to sit there in the east for more than 24 hours, and you're going to get that next week. I'm starting to think, just judging from what I've been seeing on and what the Climate Prediction Center is seeing with respect to the longer term, even beyond this period, is the fact that the polar vortex in the stratosphere is all of a sudden decided to get very strong, and it's going, you know, if that's the case, we may actually, I'm thinking we may see everything be more on the warmish side as we go through the rest of this month and maybe going into the beginning of April. It's kind of backwards. The vortex was weak through the winter. It split several times in January. We saw what happened for those 3 weeks in February, of course. And now it's decided to get strong. I'll bring it up on the map in a minute, and you'll be able to see that. But I think I'm going to throw in the towel on my idea maybe that there's going to be a window of opportunity for some snow around the middle of the month. I'm thinking now maybe that's not going to happen.
Doesn't seem that way. We're also into that time of the year where, you know, in the tri-state New York area, you've got places, you know, north and west of New York City that sometimes will go, you know, well into the 60s to around 70. And then at the same time that's happening, with a light, even just a light southerly breeze, places along the Sound Shore of Westchester and especially along the south coast of Long Island, stuck in the 40s.
In the 40s. 50. And sometimes with fog. And also for the Jersey Shore, too. The same thing with the south wind. Let's see. The WPC folks on their surface map this evening actually analyze a bunch of fronts. They got one off the Carolina coast, one coming off the Carolina coast, and yet a third that's coming down through upstate New York. Now, that's probably helping to produce those snow showers that Chuck is seeing in the Catskills, but it's behind that we've got, and this was at 5 o'clock, so now that it's 8 o'clock, that front's probably down near the coast. This is cold air that we're talking about here that is with this high in Minnesota, and cold Canadian air that's coming down. The gradient is fairly tight and getting probably getting a little tighter during the overnight with a low near Nova Scotia and deepening. And, of course, the 1032 high, large pressure change over a relatively short distance. And you've got a tight gradient, and therefore you get into the wind. WPC over the next 7 days, and this takes us to, let's see if I can freshen this map up. This takes us into Monday evening, and except for stuff in upstate New York, in and around the lakes, Joe, no precip for the next 7 days for much of Maine, eastern and southern New England, the northern mid-Atlantic states, down to almost down to southern Virginia before you get to the 0.01 line. So we may go at least 7 days without any precip. And that extends, by the way, virtually, for whatever light precip that's being shown, for all intents and purposes, the entire northern half of the United States, north of 35 degrees north, doesn't get any precip. Now that changes in the Rockies in Colorado, over into Nebraska, Oklahoma, and back over into Utah. Probably going to see some snow out there in the west, and you're seeing also rains up and down California and up into the Pacific Northwest. But a large portion of the country is going to be bone dry.
In contrast, the south end of your state, Georgia, looks like they will pick up maybe as much as 3 or 4 inches between now and the beginning of next week.
Yeah, two waves. The first one that'll move through for Tuesday night, Wednesday, which means that hopefully I get a little bit of dry time tomorrow, because it rained this morning, then it stopped. Not doing anything now, just a lot of clouds. So I'm hoping the rain holds off so that I can get a little bit of exercise time tomorrow at the park. And, oh, by the way, I went looking for dogs today, just so you know.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's
I've been without. It's been a few years.
About 2 years now, right?
It's been
a little
like,
over 2 years.
I think it's 3 years. I think it's 3 years now. Cody has crossed over on the Rainbow Bridge. It's time for me to get a new dog. So I looked at two of them. I looked at two dogs, and I'm thinking about it because, you know, it's responsibility, and I don't want to take it lightly. Both dogs were very nice. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to sleep on it.
Now, let's say you do get a dog, and you said you are going to come back at least one more time up here.
Yeah, I'll bring the dog with me. I'll bring the dog with me.
Really? So yeah. That means the dog is going to be a relatively small dog.
No, I'm not. I don't think so. I'm not getting a Great Dane. Let's put it that way. I'm probably a mid-sized dog.
Okay.
I don't want to get a small dog here, Joe, because there's hawks and eagles and things. And, you know, if it's outside, I don't want it to become, you know, a raptor's lunch.
Yeah, I understand.
So,
I understand.
Yeah. All right. So let's see.
I had a Yorkie. And one time I saw a red-tailed hawk just circling above us.
Yeah. You know,
probably saying, like, get that human out of the way so I can have some dinner. So,
yeah, and I was driving on the local highway here, going into the next town. Yes, on Sunday. It was yesterday. Yes, no, Saturday. And on my way back, a couple of vultures landed, you know, as I was going by, because there was a dead squirrel and they were having a feast. And, you know, those were pretty large birds. I'm thinking, you know what, I'm not taking any chances with any raptors with a small dog. So anyhow, There's really not a whole lot happening here, folks, other than this storm that is now intensifying in eastern Canada, and the shot of cold air that we talked about last week, that's coming down. There's a wave on the stalled frontal boundary that comes out of the central Gulf. You can see the rain in the southeast that moves offshore Wednesday morning. Maybe some high clouds come up halfway up the coast out of that. At the same time, Joe, there's another weak cold front that comes through late on Wednesday, and that brings in the next big high coming down from the north. This shot of cold air is not quite as cold as what this shot is. It probably will get breezy again. But after that high goes out, on Saturday we have another wave that moves across the Gulf, that comes out of down from Oklahoma across Florida, and because we have a blocking pattern here that's so strong, this thing is getting suppressed way to the south. Not going to be a factor here. Once that goes out, that starts the setup for the warmer temperatures next week. And you see how the surface high drops from eastern Canada to the Virginia, North Carolina coast, and then suddenly starting on you know what? I'm looking at this, Joe. The cold air takes a little longer to pull out on Monday. 38 might be too low. But it does take a little bit longer to pull out on Monday, but certainly by Tuesday, because by Monday night and Tuesday, we're into a west-southwest wind, and that holds all week. There's nothing that comes, as far as a front is concerned. The next one just kind of falls apart before it gets here on Friday, and then you got backdoor issues with some kind of storm that goes over to the western lakes. So it looks like we have a very quiet stretch ahead.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, at this time next week, there's probably going to be a ridge of high pressure that extends right along the Atlantic seaboard, all the way from Maine, all the way down the coast to Florida. And as we move through the course of the day, and again, you got to take into account, I'm not, you know, I'm not getting into this in terms of snow or whatever, but the angle of the sun is considerably higher now than it was just a few weeks ago. So
You feel it.
Yeah.
You definitely feel it.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking here. There's a week low at the end of the week. The one that comes out of Oklahoma doesn't really produces a bit of snow in the Rockies there in the Colorado Rockies. There's action in the West with some rain and snow into California. Next week it's much more active in the western half of the United States, but that's because the ridge is in the east and the trough is in the west. So I'm not really. Yeah, it's hard to see. I mean, by the time we get to the end of the forecast period here, we're at March 17th. Now, at this point, at the end of the period, of course, there's some colder air that's coming down, but we're almost to St. Patrick's Day at this stage of the game. I'm really starting to wonder, you know, here that we could wind up going, you know, that this may be one of those marches where we get very little in the way of snow.
It figures.
Right, because you need that 1.6.
1.4.
I'm sorry. Here's the stratosphere. And just to show you, everybody, what's happening with the polar vortex. As I was saying earlier, this thing has decided. I'm going to go back. There's missing frames on the 18Z run. So let me just go back to the 12Z run so we have a full set. But if you take a look, it's kind of elongated north-south here at the start. But as we move through time, the rest of this week and into next week, the vortex actually not only migrates up toward Siberia and Russia, but it actually strengthens. It's stronger now, Joe. This polar vortex is stronger now than almost any time it was during January and February. And what that's doing is it's basically wrapping up all the cold air up in Siberia and up in the Arctic regions. And then the polar vortex actually swings around and starts to drop southward again as we head toward mid-month. But you got to figure that anything that goes on up there is going to be about a two-week lag. So it's going to weaken because it has to. We're going into the spring. This polar vortex is unusually strong, but it is going to weaken. But by the time it does that, you have a couple of weeks of lag time to translate into the lower levels of the atmosphere, then you're into the first or second week of April. So I'm thinking this is going to be a very tough sell for another snowfall. Maybe now that I've thrown in the towel, that'll be the magic indicator of something happening. But it just doesn't.
I want to straighten something out on the chat board here. Keith James II says that this is in reference to my comment about a minute or two ago about the sun angle and how with the higher sun angle, it could feel and get milder than it was just a month or so ago. And he says, that's funny about the sun angle. I brought it up 10 days ago on here and was mocked. The reason we had some jokes.
We don't mock. We
10 days ago, I think you brought up the fact that sun angle could reduce the possibility of any significant snow accumulation. And what I'm talking about is just in terms of temperature, how you could have a cloudy, dreary day at this time of the year now, and it could be in the 30s or even near 40. All you need is the sun, and because of that higher sun angle, the temperature can jump just based on the sun angle, like 10 or 12 degrees into the 50s. That's really what I'm making note of here in terms of temperature. I think you were bringing up the fact that the sun angle was going to keep the snow accumulations down because of the higher angle and whatever, and also the warmth of the ground. And, you know, yeah, 10 days, 2 weeks ago is one thing. We've advanced quite a bit in these last couple of weeks in terms of the higher angle of the sun.
Right, and
talking about it. 10 days ago, we were still in mid-February, for God's sake. Yeah.
Right, and you can't make a blanket statement about sun angle's impact on snow accumulation until you know exactly what you're dealing with, because as you and I have pointed out many times, and I know I'm a big, I've been hammering this idea intensity trumps everything. Okay, if you're snowing at rates of an inch an hour or more, okay, I don't care what. I mean, unless you're in April, and even then, it can be accomplished. But if you're snowing at rates of an inch an hour or more, the sun angle's not going to really matter very much. And the quote unquote warm ground is a fallacy, because when you have a snowstorm, and when I'm talking a snowstorm, I'm talking about something that produces, you know, heavy amounts of snow, not something that comes along and, you know, it's a coating to an inch or two. But if you're dealing with something that's going to produce a significant snowfall, and you and I have both seen it where it's been in the 60s and even in the 70s the day before, and then you wind up, you know, with snow-covered roads and within 20 minutes or 30 minutes of snowfall happening. So you have to kind of look at each situation individually. And by the way, none of this, you know, obviously the sun angle does not, you know, it doesn't matter when it snows at night. So I just have a real problem. You know, I don't sit here when I make a forecast and say, you know, I'm going to make a snow, you know, the date, you know, whatever the date is, I'm not looking to see, well, where's the sun angle here on this date? Just because that's going to impact how much snow I'm going to forecast. Just not going to do, you know, I just don't work that way. And I don't think most forecasters do. So anyway, just to clarify, we don't mock. we were just having a teensy bit of fun. Let's put it like that.
Well, take a look, Joe. How about what we've seen in this season? This season.
Yeah.
I think it was back in September the 8th. Remember we were talking about in Denver, it was 90 degrees.
Yes.
And the very next day it was snowing.
Yes.
And sticking. So there you go.
Exactly. Precisely. Well, I'm glad you remembered that. Where's Ruth Liscoat? Because he's usually one. He's watching. He's from that area. He can testify exactly to what happened. Sun angle, warm ground, and everything else. You're right. It was 90 degrees the day before, and some places got hammered with snow the next day. So
my sister Lisa was up for a job at the Children's Television Workshop, which makes Sesame Street. That would have been a big thing for her to get this particular job. Her assignment, she had to write a whimsical story. And she wrote a story about how, I think, Cookie Monster and Grover and a couple of the other characters, they were out, they had their sunglasses on. It was like 90 degrees hot. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the sketch, it starts to snow. And she thought it was very funny. And again, it was supposed to be a whimsical story. And the head of the Children's Television Workshop, I won't mention his name because I don't remember what his name is, but basically told my sister, he said, this is so stupid. You know, it's one thing to be whimsical. Why are you writing about something that can never happen, that cannot possibly happen? Snow, sunshine and heat hot one day and snow that. She didn't get the job. And she tells me about this. And I said, you want me to write this guy a nasty letter? Because it has happened and it will happen. And it did. And it has happened since.
Yep.
You can have those cases where you could have incredible, you know, heat in one day and then the very next day. And we've even seen it here in New York City. But,
Well, let's do a little bit of Briller Jeopardy and have some fun tonight. We don't have any storms to look at. And by the way, through all of this, just want to mention SPC, the Storm Prediction Center, has no severe weather in their forecast for the next 4 days. So they're also looking at this and saying, you know what, it looks kind of quiet. So, all right. So let's, tonight's category for Mr. Rayo is television. Okay. So you should be able to, you should work well with this.
That's interesting because they had a category on Jeopardy tonight. TV shows that debuted in 1984, which was also the year that the new version of Jeopardy debuted. So that was an interesting category. So what's your category on Briller Jeopardy?
All right. So question number one, the highest, this one you'll know, the highest rated TV series finale.
Oh, that has to be MASH.
Correct. Right? Yes, that is correct. Question two.
Something like 110 million people watch that. So.
Yes. Question two, the longest running drama TV show.
Dramatic TV show?
Yes.
Well, back in the day, you could have, if you counted Gunsmoke as a drama, you could have said that. But let's see, drama. It wouldn't be Grey's Anatomy, would it?
No. It's still on, I think.
Is Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, no, that doesn't count. it has all those. Terminal Hospital. No. This is it's a primetime drama. It's had all these spin off. You know, it's spun off a whole bunch of shows too.
I don't know. Law and Order.
Law and Order. Which one?
Oh, you mean it's like NCIS San Diego,
yeah,
Philadelphia?
Right. So it's Law and Order SVU, or as I like to call it, Law and Order SUV, which is a drama about murders committed inside sport utility vehicles. 22 seasons, by the way.
All right. 22?
Yes.
Well, but Gunsmoke was on for, but again, is Gunsmoke considered a drama?
Because Gunsmoke really was, I think, wouldn't that genre be Western?
Yeah, but Westerns can be dramatic, can't they? Or
right, but dramas, not all dramas are Westerns. Westerns can be dramas, but can dramas be Westerns? What non-sports TV show led the Nielsen ratings the most consecutive years? And it went from 2004 to 2011. So for 8 years. What non-sports TV show?
Now, did I mention this before? Was it Grey's Anatomy?
No. This show actually went off the air and now is back on the air on another network.
Well, there are a lot of shows that have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first show that ever did that was My Three Sons. They went from ABC to CBS.
This is CBS. You're right. Hazel also went
from NBC
to CBS. And CBS ruined it. So this show from 2004 to 2011 for 8 consecutive seasons.
I have no clue. You know what, Joe? You and I both, you know, worked a number of years during the evening, and we didn't watch TV.
Right. I'll give you the answer. So it's American Idol.
American Idol.
Right. So now question 4, what TV series now in its 32nd record season? Okay.
The Simpsons?
Correct. And now, finally, we can get to what you've been bringing up a couple of times already. From 1955 to 1985, what was the longest-running show that lasted 20 seasons?
Gunsmoke.
That's it. You finally got your Gunsmoke.
I finally got my Gunsmoke. And by the way, for those of you who were fans, and there are a lot of you I know of a certain age, of My Three Sons, one of the top 5 My Three Son episodes is going to air tomorrow morning at the ungodly hour of 6:30. So if you have MeTV, it'll be on tomorrow morning at 6:30 a.m. Again, one of the top 5 most remembered My Three Son episodes is when Ernie, the bespectacled little guy of the show, when Ernie makes friends
With Zsa Zsa
Gabor. He goes, I guess, on one of the Hollywood tours with his dog Tramp, and somehow or other runs into Zsa Zsa. And when he comes home, nobody in his house believes him. That he calls her Miss Zsa Zsa. I haven't seen this episode myself, and the guy was like 40 some odd years or whatever. I'm actually thinking about getting up tomorrow morning to 6:30 to watch it. He kept calling her Miss Zsa Zsa.
Well, why can't you DVR it?
Oh, I don't know how to do that, Joe.
Well,
neither does my wife.
Oh, she knows how to do it. She knows how to do everything. Oh, please. Brandon Daugherty hitting Super Chat tonight. Thank you, Brandon, very much for doing that. We appreciate it. Mr. Ruben Fairchild says, what is Gunsmoke? Look it up. James Arness was the star of Gunsmoke. And what was, you know, her face is right in front of me. Who played the female lead?
Miss Kitty?
Yeah.
Miss Kitty.
Who played Miss? Oh no, it's like her face is right in front of me. I know her name, and I can't remember what it was or what her name is.
Did you know that Gunsmoke was a very popular radio show that actually ran concurrently with the television version?
Yes.
In fact, James Arness was introduced to the television public by John Wayne on the very first episode of Gunsmoke, because a lot of people said, "Well, Marshall Dillon must be played by John Wayne," and John Wayne came and said, listen, I don't have the time to do this, but you're
I don't have the time to do a TV show.
But who was the man who played Marshall Dillon on radio and played a damn good Marshall Dillon on radio, but couldn't do it for one specific reason or one obvious reason if you saw him in front of you?
Wally Cox.
William Conrad.
Oh yes. Oh, and in fact, it's funny you bring up William Conrad. I'll get to it in a second. I just wanted the chairman hitting Super Chat tonight. Thank you. How many days in February did Central Park receive at least a trace of snow? I don't remember. The February just passed.
Oh, well. So it seemed like it snowed every day.
Yes, it did.
I'll say like 21.
So you bring up William Conrad. It's so funny because I was watching American Movie Classics the other day, which I watch a lot, and there was a movie that was actually directed by a really bad horror movie starring Connie Stevens, Cesar Romero. Oh. And then a few other more familiar character actors too. And it was called Two on a Guillotine. And it was just, I mean, it was, Joe, it was one of these movies that was, you know, it's so bad that it's good type of movie. Yeah. And I was reading the reviews. I was reading about the movie. You know, I looked up, I did a little research. I saw that William Conrad had, and actually William Conrad had directed a few of these kind of horror movies in the early 60s, but the reviews were just scathing, just how awful this was. But it was a surprise to me that he directed that, and that was right around the time that he was also doing the voice of on Rocky the Flying Squirrel.
He didn't do the voice of Rocky.
No, the narration. I'm sorry, the narration. Right. Yeah, so
well,
that's...
it looks like Boss and Natasha are going to get it again. Tune in again tomorrow for... And they would do a bad pun.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, just kind of...
It was hard to believe that he did that voice. If you heard him on radio, he had a very strong, bassy type of voice. And obviously, a lot of people were asking, well, how come the guy who does the voice of Matt Dillon on the radio isn't the one who's going to play Matt Dillon on television? And if you remember William Conrad, he played Cannon, and he also played the Fat Man in Jake and the Fat Man. Once you saw him, it's obvious why he couldn't play Marshall Dillon.
Yes. Mr. Ruben Fairchild says, a scientist can't figure out how to use a DVR, can't make it up. And then he says, old, old, old. Have a little respect, for God's sake. You know, Jesus. Everybody gets to a certain age, and I've said this, everybody reaches a certain age where they just absolutely refuse to learn how to anything new. And that's everybody. So Mr. Ruben Fairchild, you will one day be old and you will not want to learn how to do new things. So just bear that in mind.
I don't remember exactly what the year was, but at one of the News 12 Christmas parties, I actually won one of these DVR, Bluetooth recording machines. It's still in the original box. Never opened it.
Yeah, well, it's
upstairs somewhere. And when you consider the fact that I've not been at News 12 now in 5 years, that gives you the idea about how long that thing has been in its
room. Yeah, well, I know
the damn thing might be obsolete by now.
Well, you don't even need it, Joe. If you've got Optimum, you can go on the box with your remote and set the DVR. And just
really?
You pull up the guide, okay? I think you hit the DVR button on your remote. You pull up the guide. You scroll to the show you want to record. You press enter, and then it's all set. I had mine recording Perry Mason every morning and every night because I wasn't staying up till 11:30 to watch Perry Mason, so I would watch it the next day. But it's real easy to do if you've got the remote. So give it to Mrs. Rayo. She'll figure it out. She'll figure it out. I mean, you married a genius. She
does all of this. I'm doing all of this for Zsa Zsa, right?
Yes. Oh, good Lord. Anyway,
I think the best part of that episode was at the very end when Fred McMurray and William Demarest look at each other. When Zsa Zsa come at the end of the show, you know, after they mocked, there's that word again, mocked Ernie for claiming that he met Zsa Zsa Gabor. There's a knock at their door, and who shows up but Zsa Zsa? Well, I want to just say it was so lovely with my friend Ernie. The last thing, but it's like one of the most memorable episodes of My Three Sons.
This is,
and in fact, Barry Livingston, who played the role of Ernie, when he did an interview with American Television Classics or Archives or whatever. They asked him about that episode, and he just like started laughing uncontrollably. I mean, who's going to believe that a 12-year-old kid is going to run into Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Do 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 do. Listen, Fred McMurray had the charmed life. You ever read the story about how they used to film that show? He would show
right,
up.
They filmed it around him.
Yeah, he would show up for work for like 2 days a month. And he would shoot all his scenes and you know, I didn't realize it until after I read it and then I looked for it on the episodes. But you'll see a lot of cutaway shots. So
right.
He didn't even have to be there. Or where it's like you see the back of him, so they could have a stand-in. And you would see the back of someone that was pretending to be Fred McMurray. Yeah, he had a charmed life because he got rich on uranium up in Nevada or something. He had some kind of uranium mine that he invested in and made, you know, millions of dollars. And he and his wife,
Haver? Or
yes, June Haver.
Right.
Yeah, he and his wife. So they basically, you know, lived semi-retired rich lives. And he would come down 2 days a month, film whatever scenes he needed to film for whatever happened, you know, for all the episodes that they were doing. And then he would, you know, go away for the other 28 days and get paid oodles and oodles of money. And he was, you know.
Yeah, the only time he ever made anything on that show was at the very beginning when he would look straight into the camera and say, "Hi. Welcome to our show for Hunts Castle."
And he played this father figure, and it was the best way to describe him was he was probably the calmest father that you could watch him and you say, "I want him to be my dad because he would never yell at me." Okay.
Right.
So,
right.
But yet when you look at Fred McMurray, and he played it very well, but he played some really despicable characters in his career. In the Kane Mutiny, he played a Navy officer that had absolutely no conscience, and also in Double Indemnity with the Barbara Stanwyck. Now he played also a number of comedy roles and good character roles, but he had a very well-rounded career. Playing all sorts of playing the entire spectrum of good and evil. I always respect actors that can, you know, when I see old movies and I see them playing, you know, these different parts where they're stretched. He was very talented, very talented
Shaggy,
man.
The Shaggy Dog, and Son of Flubber.
Yeah, I mean, he did movies like that, and then he does Double Indemnity in the Caine Mutiny with Humphrey Bogart, Jose Ferrer, Van Johnson. Right. You know, just
and that one guest shot on the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour.
Yeah, exactly. Which they shot in 2 days because he only works 2 days a month.
That's right. One time, you remember that scene where they were supposed to go up or come down a mountain,
right,
real fast in a convertible or whatever, and they just couldn't make the shot, and finally Desi Arnaz uttered in Spanish a couple of expletives, got in the car and did the scene perfectly, going up and coming down again, whatever. And he comes out of the car and somebody said, Desi, that was great, but we weren't filming.
Oh, good Lord. All those funny stories. I got to get out my TV trivia books and go through those again. Refresh my mind. Some of the funny stories of the day.
We're five shy of 100 likes. So now would you please, if you have
he's going to start begging again.
Hit the like button so we can close this out. Or else we're going to be here for the rest of the night and we're going to be talking about Chuck Cunningham, the missing brother on Happy Days.
Do-do-do-do. Well, you know what? What about the missing brother on My Three Sons? Because
right.
The
King
old...
Constantine.
Right, and... You know, they wrote him off, and you never heard about him again. Not even a mention. And then later in the series, Rob Grady, who played the oldest brother, he left the show.
He gets married to Katie.
Right, Tina Cole.
One of the, and
has triplets, for God's sake. So she's having triplets. He decides the way they wrote the character out was that he joins the Peace Corps. Sure, I'm going to join the Peace Corps. I'm going to leave my pregnant wife with carrying triplets. I'm going to go work in the Peace Corps. You could only get away with something like that in the 60s.
He got into a real row with the producers of My Three. Don Federson, who also produced Family Affair.
Yes.
Mr. French. But he got into a big argument after he got married to Katie. They were still doing scenes in the bedroom with twin beds. And he's screaming at them saying, this is 1960 blankety eight. He said, why are we still doing this? Why don't we show one bed instead of, I guess, to appease. And then that's when Katie got pregnant and had the triplets to demonstrate that, they weren't in the twin beds.
Mr. Reuben Fairchild, they hit his message, but I unhit it. He said, can we talk about something modern on television? Jeez. Okay. No, we can't. We're old. Just like you said, we're old. Okay. We come from a time where you had to actually change the channel by turning a dial.
Right. My wife just went on the chat board and said, thank you everyone and have a good night. That's the signal because we have 108 likes. So Joe, I guess we might as well.
All right. So we'll see everybody tomorrow at 7:30. Right? Tomorrow's regular time, correct?
Tomorrow's a regular time. Wednesday
will be later. Okay. All right. So we'll see everybody tomorrow at 7:30. And thanks for the super chat hits from the chairman and from Brandon Daugherty. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.